This episode is sponsored in part by Swim. Okay, here's a depressing stat. 70% of shoppers who want your products never actually buy them. They browse, they consider, then they forget. That's revenue walking out the door. Swim Wishlist Plus turns browsers into buyers. Customers save products they want, get notified when prices drop or items restock. You can also engage them in personalized fashion through your marketing or sales outreach. It's like having a personal shopper reminding them to come back and buy from you instead of your competitors. And 45,000 stores already use it, and it only takes 5 minutes to install. You can try it free today for 14 days. Go to getswim.com/Kurt. That's swimwithay.com/Kurt. Turn those maybe laters into sales today. Getswim.com. I met my friends, I think for sure, as a business owner, it's everybody's dream that you sell a business. We've heard a lot of stories on the show about people who have been successful with their business and then sold their business or reasons. And then what happens after that? Where does the money go? How long does it last? What do you do afterward? What does life after exit look like? And recently I was talking to my friend, Ben Neggendorf, who's been on the show before back in 2022. And he had this experience. He sold a business. And then I believe, and he's going to share this with us because he gave this talk and is really candid, just shared all the numbers. He's going to tell us where the money went. Where did it go? Ben Neggendorf, thanks for joining me. How are you doing? I want to know where the money went.
Yeah, I'm happy to be back. Yeah, I told you I did this presentation and you turned it into a nice little talk here. So I'm excited to see how we can turn a presentation into a podcast because you're right. It's interesting what happens after you get a lump sum of money. And I think it's even more interesting what happens when you get payouts, if you will, and in the middle of COVID. Like COVID was just an absolute weird time in so many different ways. And I think you'll see that in some of the places the money went.
And I think the other thing I want to bring up that I didn't in my intro is your origin story before, you know, you were in this position selling a successful e-com business for $750,000. You were a forklift operator at Walmart, right?
Yeah, it all started in 2015, as I mentioned. I think I was on your show in early 22. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
Where it kind of gave you my backstory there. But yeah, I was driving a forklift at a Walmart distribution center and, just a kid with a dream, if you will, Kurt. And look where we are now. So, I think anyone can do this stuff. It's just you have to put your attention to it and actually, give a shit. Like, put in the effort instead of sitting on your couch watching Netflix or playing Call of Duty or whatever it is you do.
Okay, I like sitting on my couch playing PlayStation, but 100% I'm not going to build a successful business doing that. You're right. And the pandemic was such an interesting time. So tell me, when you went to sell this business, when you signed it, when you sold it.
Yeah, so if you remember in my previous story, again, I didn't own this whole business, right? I actually consulted these two boys to $250,000 in sales in their first 3 months. And then they asked me to come on board. I paid $20,000 for 20% of the business, and we scaled from $1 million in revenue in the first year to $11 million 2 years later. And that's when they approached me, and they were like, hey, I think we're ready to go off on our own. We're ready to jump out of the nest, if you will. And this was February of 2020, so just shortly before interesting times. And they approached me, and we kind of all felt like it was a good time to go our separate ways. I certainly was interested in a payday, and they were interested in going on their own. And kind of wild. Next month or so in the world after that.
That March 2020 is when everything shuts down.
Yeah.
And then obviously that becomes a strange period in the world. Prior to then, the before times never considered such things. So, how much did you get?
Yeah, so the deal was pretty simple, $720,000 over 3 years, right? So $20,000 a month, plus some interest after that, which is, no one's going to balk at that kind of deal.
$20,000 a month. The risk I've always heard with payouts is they stop coming at some point. Did you get the full, were there disputes? Did you get the full payout?
Yeah, no disputes. I had full confidence in what was built over there and really where the company was going. If I'm honest, in hindsight, I would tell you, there were bottlenecks that were probably cleared up once I left. Like I think I was more hesitant on the hiring that needed to be done. As soon as I left, they hired like 10 people. And then, you know, as you know, so I signed the check and I was flying home on like March 4th, March 5th. You know, a week later, the world shut down. I can picture Mark Cuban's face as he's at the basketball game looking at his phone like, oh my goodness. And then, as you can imagine, an indoor golf company did pretty well during that next period. So I think I was pretty confident about like where we were going or where the company was going. And I certainly had confidence in the two founders of the company. They're both rock stars. And so I personally wasn't worried. I've definitely heard it from other people who have earned out and, you know, they've worried about it. I think a lot of people still meddle in those companies to make sure everything's going well and they try to do the best they can. But yeah, no, it was a clean break and I felt good about it.
Okay. So no lump sum payment up front here. This starts at a consistent monthly payment start to finish.
Yep.
Okay. And I think that changes a little bit. You know, there's a difference between someone hands me $500,000 and someone hands me, you know, an annuity.
Yeah.
Makes it, I think, maybe a little harder to spend through it all, you know, when there's not just a giant pile of cash, you know, sitting in front of me. What's the first thing you bought?
If I'm honest, I don't have a recollection of buying anything in March 2020. I think it was such a weird time. So those first payments came in late March or early April. And, you know, full transparency, my wife had two very close family members die very early on from COVID. And so I think our lived experience was much different than most people. You know, could go all the way to one extreme of like, you know, COVID's not real. No one died from it, to it's very real. And I'm very scared. And I think we were closer to that further end of like, holy shit. Like we have very close family members who passed away. And so we spent, you know, most of those months, as a lot of us did, not doing anything, right? There was nothing open. We were in Wisconsin, so there was a few more things open here than there was maybe where some of the listeners are listening from. But
5 years later, you still have all the cash?
No, 5 years later, it's gone. Honestly, that's what I made this whole presentation about. Is like, where did it go? And it certainly went to some good things. It went to some, I called it mid in this presentation. I think I'm too old to say that word. And some, you know, terrible things as well. But look, I'm happy to share with you everywhere it went.
Okay, that's why I'm here. That's what I want to know. Tell me how you messed up that cash, Ben.
The first thing I did, I invested close to $100,000 on coaching, masterminds, events, and mentorship, right? So that includes coaching with my coach, Elliot Rowe, as you can see on the screen there. I think he's the best mindset coach in the world. Mastermind events like the one ECF, where I know Kurt's a big fan of
e-commerce
ECF.
Fuel. I'm
big.
ECF, yeah.
Right, yeah. It could be little mastermind events like you see on the screen or live events such as e-commerce fuel. And I did a bunch of one-on-one consulting as well with different types of mentors. So I would consider that a good place to spend the money. At one of those events, I met Mike Dillard. I don't know if you know who Mike Dillard is or was. He was a big guy in the information marketing space back in the day. And this was the first moment I kind of had a inkling of, hey, maybe I should do something here. He literally pulled me aside and he's like, hey, you know, that money could set you up for life, right? If you just knew how to put it to work. And he kind of gave me a talking to, but I wasn't listening. But more good here. I had a kid. We spent five straight winters in Florida, which was a big deal for me. You know, speaking of that coach, Elliot Rowe, I got on a call with him one day in the middle of winter. He's like, you know, how you going, mate? And I just said, like, it's winter. I hate my life. I don't want to be here in Wisconsin. And he was like, then why are you there? He's like, you have the money, you have the resources, and you don't need to be anywhere. Just leave. And I'm really glad he said that. So we spent five straight winters in Florida. We flew grandparents on both sides down, aunts and uncles on both sides down. Just intentional, like, living, right? This is memories we'll have forever. And then another great place I would say I spent the money was on a concierge doctor. He helped me identify why I couldn't seem to shed any weight despite wearing 400 pounds at one point. So none of those were like bad decisions, but none of them were part of a wealth plan either, if that makes sense, Kurt.
So someone early on tries to tell you, I'm assuming you should invest the money.
Yeah. Yeah. He gave me a bunch of options for like REITs that, you know, he lives in Austin. And so he was like, I can connect you with this person to get your money in a REIT. I can connect you with this person who can invest it over here. I can connect you with somebody over here. I think the mastermind I happened to see him at was right in the middle of 21 or 22 when the market first crashed a little bit in July. And he was like, you know, you kind of missed the rally here on crypto. I wouldn't go into crypto right now. We're going to enter a bear market. I wouldn't put my money in the market. It's going to, you know, turn sour. But there are places like real estate, long-term things that you can put your money into that are going to make sense long-term. And you know, if you just keep it in your account, it's going to disappear. I promise you that. And he was right.
We'll have to clean this up. But if I calculate the date and I just say like April 1st, 2020, and our initial investment, like let's say we just put in the 20,000 right then and we're going to put it in Apple stock and we're going to reinvest the dividends too. If I calculate that out.
Don't tell me.
All right. The 20,000 would be 62,000 now. It's easy for me to go, you know, hindsight 2020, go, yeah, no, absolutely. You should have just invested in this. And then, you know, you would have untold millions.
Yep.
But yeah, at the time, you know, when you're watching, you don't know what's going to happen, especially in that first year of the pandemic, you know, and the market's tanking. You're like, well, do I really want to do this? So, yeah.
I think the big thing for me was like immediate lifestyle creep, if you will, right? So I went from making...
Lifestyle creep.
Like we were distributing $6,000 a month roughly to me, right? And I had some consulting on the side, and as well as I had a company, Paramount Pet Health at the time, that was doing pretty well. But that six turned into 20, right? Essentially, the payouts just kept coming at 20. And so it was very easy for me to just go, I have more, I'm going to spend more, right? Like the second you earn more, your life seems to expand to match it. Now, it doesn't happen with Lambos. I know you're a Tesla guy. It doesn't happen with Teslas, but it happens with Amazon boxes and like slight upgrades and more meals out and better vacations. And it just continues to add up and you don't really notice it as it's creeping along. Like lifestyle creep is a real thing that I don't think I would have ever imagined to be a thing. Just given where I came from, I grew up relatively poor, Kurt, like very, you know, low middle class. And I couldn't imagine being in a place where I was making, you know, those mailbox money checks that were coming in on a monthly basis. You know, two of those is like what my dad made as a kid. So I don't think it registered with me the gravity of the situation. This is then the presentation when I was really hoping the room would raise their hand, Kurt. So maybe you could raise your hand. How many of you own an NFT? Yeah, great. How many of you own worthless NFTs now? Oh, yeah.
I almost bought an NFT once, and then I found the process so difficult. I'm like, I'm just not going to bother with this. And of course, the NFT I was trying to buy became worthless.
Yeah,
pretty quickly. Yeah, so, NFTs. Okay.
So I bought some. Some did really well. I still hold some. But most of them, like everyone else's, went to zero, right? So I'm a huge Gary V fan. He has his V friends, which you can see some of those on there. And his NFTs have treated me well. Certainly all the stuff that he gives away to his NFT holders have treated me well. And honestly,
How much, man? How much did you spend on NFTs?
I don't know if I could put a dollar figure on what I spent on it versus what is still here, if I'm honest with you. I think there is one later on that definitely has a dollar figure attached to it. But most of this was just me being a degenerate, right? I think some of us bought NFTs during that time and, you know, believing you're smarter than the crowd or falling for the FOMO of markets, if you will. And just look, some of these treated me well, right? Like I'm a big fan of Gary Vee and what he's building at Vee Friends, but for the most part, there was a lot of
YOLO purchasing that happened during the pandemic.
For sure. There's a whole lot of scroll underneath these ones that are actually still worth some semblance of money. So, I started actually accumulating Bitcoin during that time and speculating on Ethereum and a bunch of other shit coins that were going to make me rich. It was fun, I guess.
But Bitcoin and Ethereum would have done well.
Sure. For a time. Yep. And I'm a big believer in Bitcoin. Less so Ethereum, but you know, there was thousands of coins that launched from 2017 to 2022. They're all like chasing the next thing, chasing FOMO. And like you're investing in literally nothing but the hope that someone would buy your bags at a higher price than you paid for them. Like that's all it is. Most of them don't have any utility whatsoever. So it was dumb. And it's not like it was one bad call. There's not like one coin I put it all in and lost it all. It was just like death by 1,000. Why not? Like, let's just try this stuff. So I did start actually accumulating Bitcoin though during that time. And even though I played stupid games and I learned stupid lessons with the shit coins, I'm glad I went through the what is money journey. It caused me to learn economics and understanding investing and wealth at a much deeper level. So I'm really glad I started that. If you want, I can jump right into the bad here.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Because this is where it gets fun, right? So this is dumb stuff. So have you had Taylor Holiday on this podcast before?
Yeah, as a lightning interview. Yes. Smart guy. Okay. I like him.
Formerly of Common Thread Co. I love Taylor. Somewhere in the middle of COVID, he had tweeted back when you were tweeting, who wants to play poker? Like I'm lonely. I want to do some stuff. So we put together this ragtag group of like e-commerce entrepreneurs and agency owners and just a bunch of different people. And we all started playing poker on Wednesday night. And somehow us playing poker turned into us getting like pitched by companies while we were playing poker. So we had multiple different companies come through, pitch us on their business while we're all playing poker for real money. And then we all as a group said, hey, do we want to make an investment in this company or not? So we as a group invested in two of them. So the first one was called Dibs. So what Dibs was is a fractionalization marketplace, right? So think of stocks. You can buy, you know, fractions of a company, right, by buying stocks. But there are a lot of other assets that you can't buy fractions of, right? So sports cards is where they started. If you wanted to go buy a PSA 10 Michael Jordan rookie card, you're looking at, you know, $10,000 to $20,000 somewhere in there. You might want to buy one, Kirk, because you love Michael Jordan living in Illinois, but most of us probably don't. Or if we wanted the action on sports cards or on art or on anything else that could fractionalize, you would need a marketplace like this where you could go buy, you know, 1% of a Michael Jordan card and like enjoy the upside and then sell that 1% to someone else.
Man, those order change emails suck. They're always like, I ordered the wrong size. I meant to change the shipping address. Oops, I was drunk. Instead of making customers email you that stuff, let them fix it themselves with Cleverific. Cleverific is a self-service portal that lets customers edit their orders without bugging you. That means you get fewer headaches, customers get faster fulfillment, and there's fewer returns overall. Everybody wins. Peter Manning, New York, cut their support tickets by 99% with Cleverific. You want in on that? Get 50% off the pro plan, just $49 a month, exclusively for listeners of the Unofficial Shopify podcast. Go to cleverific.com/unofficial and use promo code KURT50. Done. Problem solved. That's Cleverific. This does, at its face, this does not seem like a bad idea. I have seen similar ideas. You know, I've seen this done with art. I've seen it done with luxury watches. I've seen it done with cars. You know, it's not, again, I'm risk averse. And so I'm like, okay, well, if I want to do my investing, I could just do it in the U.S. stock market is my preference. But this doesn't, I could see where someone would present this to you. And if you had the cash, you'd be like, okay, I'm willing to take a risk on this.
Yeah, it only got better, right? If you're at all into sports and they start telling you, well, this athlete and this athlete and this athlete and this famous athlete, they've all invested and you could be co-investors alongside all of these people that you look up to, that gets more intriguing. And then they raised a special round and only took investment from Amazon. And we were like, holy shit, this is actually happening. The founder had experience in a different company doing quite well prior to this. They ended up securing, I don't want to call it a banking charter, but it's like one of only a dozen or so, not banking charters, but something like that in the state of New York. And they still went bankrupt. Like it still didn't work out. Right. And so we invested as a group. I invested $25,000 of my own money into this as like, you know, it's a pretty normal size check when you're doing VC investing. I'm a big VC now, Kurt. But this just became a $25,000 write-off.
Yep. So it didn't work out.
It did not. And let me tell you one more. Have you heard of Whatnot, Kurt?
No.
Okay, Whatnot is like a social selling platform. Well, I invested in the one you still, if you've heard of Whatnot, you definitely haven't heard of Loop. So it's very similar. They are still around. I don't want to, you know, poo-poo on them at all by any means. But they're not, you know, Whatnot is huge, right? They're the clear market leader here. They're live selling, which I think is 100% going to be a thing in the next few years here in America. A lot of people are breaking cards on there, but they're doing all sorts of other stuff, right? If you go back to the beginning of like what streaming was, it was just video games. Now I challenge you to go on Kick and go watch some of the stuff people are doing live. Like people are live streaming themselves sleeping, which is absolutely wild to me. And people are commenting and sending subscriptions and paying cash. And like, there's so much you can do on these platforms. I think it's the early stages, but we invested, a few of us invested in Loop, a much smaller investment than the 25K. But again, I've seen no return from this. You know, I wish them the best. I hope they do well. I understand what they're trying to build. And I hope someday I see a return on my investment, but more likely, you know, it's going to end up being a donation.
So this one is still an ongoing concern, but
yeah, we'll see.
We're not holding out hope.
Yeah. Well, the reality is I lit the money on fire thinking I was smarter than VCs, right? So VCs hope that one out of the 10 companies they invest in actually make it, right? Their whole business model depends that one of those 10 actually returns the capital of the other 9 investments that went bankrupt. But look, I was going to hit my first couple, Kurt. I'm really smart. And indeed, they're like really good ideas on face. But good ideas don't mean dick. Like execution is all that matters. And even though they had loads of experience, the backing of famous athletes and Amazon, the first one failed and you know, the second one's still there and they're doing okay. But you know, none of these are VC investments where you're hoping to 10X, 100X over 5-10 years.
All right. So yeah, don't blame me for that one. Cause I've also, you know, I've done the same thing. Been like, oh yeah, I'll write you, you know, $20,000 check. It was over the same period. And I've not had a positive return on my investment. And of the companies I invested in, you know, one's gone. That money's gone. You know, and the others. There's one good one in there, but has not returned anything yet. So this one happens to the best of us.
On the flip side of that, it makes me want to shoot for the moon. It makes, like, I've genuinely got an idea out on this whiteboard out here that I think could be a $1 billion idea. I would need investment. I would need my sole focus on that business. But it kind of makes you want to take that shot, right? Because there's so many people that are like, great idea. Here's some money. And look, if it doesn't work, it just doesn't work. There's like no repercussion to you not taking the shot, right? It makes you want to go big.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Because like the ones that didn't work out, I don't even hold it against the founder. Like that, you know, that's the risk we take.
So back into that poker group, we were doing so well with these investments, Kurt. We thought, why not? Why not capitalize on this NFT boom? And Taylor and some others kind of led the charge here of let's do a 90-day rush. Let's like everything was ripping, right? I had a student who was selling fitness equipment and they were crushing on the word dumbbell, like dumbbell. That's it. You know, go try to win on that keyword today. But like they were crushing. There was money everywhere in 2021. So we were like all caught up in the euphoria. We were going to go after this. NFTs, NBA Top Shot. We were going to go after this. The premise was simple. We all pitch in $10,000, capitalize on the euphoria, buy and flip NFTs within 90 days and make money, right? It's a very simple premise. We're all winning. And you can see in the upper right hand corner that currently this is worth $3,000, this NFT portfolio here. And so again, I think it was a decent idea. I don't think it was executed well. And more so, all of us are e-commerce agency owners or operators. What are we doing? Like, why are we trying to be fish, you know, swimming on land? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, a lot of this was based on the timing, zero interest rate phenomenon, right?
Yeah.
It being like 2021, I don't know when interest rates start moving back up, but it felt like when interest rates get low enough, it turns into the infinite money glitch and you start seeing phenomenons like NFTs, like, you know, some of this reckless spending. You know, some of it was, you know, just a product of the time, of the environment. Certain, if you got these payouts, what about taxes? We got, all right, 180,720. All right, so 25%.
Yeah.
Is what you gave to them.
Yeah.
And then when it's on it, like an annuity payout like that, was it like each year you had to pay that 25%?
Yeah, each year, whatever you got that year. So,
okay. That makes sense. They're just,
I don't want to do public math, but you know, whatever, $250,000 a year, something like that you had to pay on.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. I mean, obviously, like, and like, as you said, there's really no way around it unless, you know, you already have like your tax attorney on speed dial and you're, you know, willing to get creative and potentially go to jail for it. I am not. I am risk averse. I will just pay them their demands. What are you going to do?
Yeah, I'm not going to not pay it, but I'm begrudgingly going
to. You don't
pay,
have
right?
to be
and
happy
I'm gonna
about
stand,
it.
I'm going to stand up and explain why I think it is nonsense that we keep paying it and that there's this entire group of people who are screaming, pay more, pay more, pay more. It doesn't make any sense to me.
So, like, when you look back on this retroactively, what's the word you would use for how you treated this money?
Man, I don't know if I have a good word for it. Just like, I would say reckless and more so like ignorance. I don't think I knew what to do. Again, I grew up in...
That's going to be my other question.
Yeah, I grew up in a lower middle class and I learned the phrase rob Peter to pay Paul from my dad. Like we would put a vacation on one card and then when 0% got offered on this card, we'd put it on this card and we'd continue moving that until we could possibly pay it off in minimum payments. And we just didn't have a lot. And I don't think the education was there on how to get more. Like for my kids, they want a Steam Deck really bad. And I said, there's 100 different ways you can make the money for a Steam Deck. Let's brainstorm those. You could, you know, God forbid have a lemonade stand. I think that's the lowest tier of what you could do as a little kid entrepreneur, but you could probably make up some like almost like circus games and stand down there. And the kids would show up for $2-3 to try the circus games just to win some of your squishmallows that I know you don't mind getting rid of, right? There's a million ways we could do this. They could color on cards and we could sell them on whatnot. There's so many different ways to make money. And I don't think I knew any of that. I was mowing lawns in my neighborhood at 9 years old. I had my own paper route at 11 years old. So I was doing everything I could, but that was my idea of money was like work a job, right? And I think I said this on the last show when I was at Walmart, I was married to a CNA and that's what I, as a kid, my dad worked at a warehouse. and his wife was a CNA. And like, I had hit the absolute peak of what I thought reality was at one point in my life. And so I just didn't have any education on what to do with money before then or after that moment.
That's the trouble, is, you know, our education system doesn't teach you like wealth management, you know? And I think even if we did teach it, most kids would be, it's so abstract, the idea of, you know, having a large sum of money, that they're not going to be able to internalize it. And, you know, for me, it was what my dad was interested in. So I picked up a lot that way. And then, you know, when I went to college, I would not even have learned it in college or getting an MBA. It was purely because there was an accounting teacher who worked it into like an unrelated class about bookkeeping. He had like all these investment and wealth strategies that he like clearly was his interest, that he just happened to work into one class that I happened to take because it was a requirement. But had I not done that, there's just a lot of core info that has been extremely helpful for me to avoid reckless spending or just, you know, unknowingly missing opportunities with money that, you know, really, I owe that guy a lot. I should find him on LinkedIn and say thanks.
Yeah. I think for me, it was just paycheck to paycheck mindset. My entire life, I was living paycheck to paycheck. And I don't think that ever changed. And until I had someone educate me on like, hey, that money should go work for you rather than just you have it, let's go spend it. Or what are we saving towards getting? You should put it to work. And I don't think I learned that even until I was in business for quite a few years. Like, obviously, I didn't know it here. I tried, right? I put it into some VC companies. I tried some things like that. But let's be real, I didn't really have a plan. And I think it takes getting a little wrecked for you to learn anyway, right? Like, people are going to make these mistakes. I'm positive there's people listening who are like, oh, fuck yeah, I definitely bought some NFTs and, you know, I tried the Dogecoin and I did that. I'm sure there's people listening like that. And we're all going to, you know, throw our money around in some stupid way. But like, you know, eventually you're going to land on what makes sense and realize that, you know, you're working your ass off to make this money. Why not put it to work further for you, right? Because just like an athlete, you know, your window isn't as short as an athlete, but it's not going to go on forever, right? Let alone the good times aren't going to go on forever. There's not going to be another huge wave of 40% of the money supply showing up and just all of us having the greatest time ever in e-commerce. And now we're in this deep low where everyone's, Taylor Holiday included, saying e-commerce is terrible. Don't start an e-commerce store. None of that's true, right? It's the ebbs and flows and knowing how to handle that.
Most, you know, if you had to do this over again, clearly you would approach it differently. You are lucky enough and skilled enough that you have that opportunity. You sold your Paramount Pet Health, you mentioned earlier, your other business, right?
I did.
And for how much?
So we sold that company right around 800, somewhere around there.
Okay, so a similar amount of money as well. When was this?
Last year, last October.
Okay. So this time around, when it shows up, are you like, all right, how are we handling it?
Yeah, first off, I need to shout them out because I know they've been on your show before. Leanna Patch was my partner in that business. Oh. Leighton Taylor was my partner in that business. So a big win for all of us. It was a fun time. But I definitely handled it differently, right? Immediately, I recognized, and I should have recognized this the first time, that I had other sources of income. I didn't need to do anything with this money. I didn't need to just spend it because I had it. It also came in a lump sum this time, which is very different than getting it, you know, monthly.
Hugely different.
You know, I spent some time. The sale process took all of 2024 and some of 2023 to get to the finish line. And so I had plenty of time to think about what to do differently this time. And I just said, I'm not going to buy anything out of the gates. Like, literally, I'm not going to buy anything. The only thing I told myself I would do is buy myself an infrared sauna. It's something I've wanted in my house for a while. And so I did that. I bought an infrared sauna and put it in my basement. And I set aside the fucking tax money. And then I put the rest in Bitcoin, all of it. Because I just wanted to put it in a place where it wasn't going to get devalued against the dollar. I didn't want to just, you know, put it in the dollar. I really didn't want to put it in the S&P 500, which is really just like seven companies all spending a shit ton on AI right now, which is pushing up their stocks. I didn't feel comfortable there. And I, you know, I believe in what Bitcoin is. And so I put it all in there.
When was this?
Right when we sold it in October last year, right around 70K. Okay.
And since Bitcoin has gone up since then, I believe.
Yeah, up and down and up and down. It's what Bitcoin does for sure, yeah.
Here's a word from our sponsors at Zipify. Black Friday's coming, and so's the squeeze. Every year, the same thing. Ad costs balloon, Customers want 40% off everything, and your margins get crushed. But there's a fix. Boost your average order value before the chaos hits. One-click upsell does exactly that, increasing AOV by up to 30% with AI-powered upsells across your entire customer journey. Launch upsells for every product in one click. Customers see personalized offers and spend more automatically. Unlike other apps, you only pay for results, not views, so you keep more profit. Takes under 2 minutes to set up and starts working immediately. Don't let this traffic season slip by without maximizing every sale. Go to Zipify.com/Kurt for your 30-day free trial. That's Zipify.com/KURT. Turn this into your most profitable Black Friday yet. I want to go over the practical takeaways. You know, having had this experience twice now, where first you're like, all right, I did it, and it went okay. It wasn't great. And now we've got new second time around. All right, you invested the money and you know, bought yourself one congratulations treat, a sauna, excellent. And it's not outrageous. You know, you could have spent $300,000 on a Lambo and it wouldn't even have been new, right? You didn't do that. Well, how much did that sauna cost, my friend?
8K maybe, 9K, something like that.
Okay, very reasonable. I'd probably buy a really wild e-bike, you know, spend like $6,000 on a nutty e-bike.
All right.
And then I would dump the rest into U.S. stock market. But you're absolutely right. It's essentially seven tech companies that really are driving things right now. And okay, so what's your takeaways? What's your advice here? Like, this is clearly about wealth building.
Yeah, I got a slide in here that I kind of referenced in the room, right? So again, I run dropship breakthrough.com with my partner, John. We teach people how to start e-commerce businesses, specifically high ticket dropshipping. If you want to understand all the benefits of that, you can certainly go listen to my last episode on here or, you know, I'm sure we have a webinar on our homepage or something like that. But there's people in the room who they're running the best investment vehicle they'll ever have. And it's probably a lot of people listening to that too, right? So if you look at, let's just use this first case study we talked about. I spent 20K to get 20% of that business. And I exited 3 years later for 720, right? That's 3,500% growth plus all of the dividends monthly in between there. If you're running any business whatsoever, if it's making a dollar, you already have the best investment vehicle you've ever had. You should spend more time trying to grow the thing you can control than putting it somewhere and hoping it grows for you. That's my opinion. I put the rest of it into something hard, right? Gold, God forbid, real estate. I'm not a big fan of real estate either, just how inflated that has gotten to, but like something that's not going to lose it, something that's going to hold its value against the dollar, right? If the dollar devalues, the asset price will go up. The rich get richer, as they say, right? Put your money in assets and your assets will ride that devaluation up. That's how I think about it, right? But I think everyone listening to this, and certainly the students who are in the room for this presentation, they know their customer, they know their margins. You can bet on them. They're an expert in their industry. Fucking act like it, right? For us, it's like buy stock so you can get even better margins. Hire that employee you don't think you can afford right now that can help grow your business. Launch your own product line, whether it be an accessory or the main product you sell. Buy links. I'll talk to you about that tomorrow morning. I wrote here as I did another presentation on links. If you guys, someone listened once that, I'll shoot it over to you. Buy consulting, right? I'm a huge, huge fan of consulting. Buy mindset coaching, as I talked with Elliot Rowe before. I think there's so many places that you can put your money and you don't need to go spend it all either, but like, you know, if you have an exit, you're probably still doing something. I don't think any of us can just shut it off and go sip a Mai Tai on the beach. Why not, you know, put that somewhere that can grow your business? Another great place is literally on the screen. I know people, one of our students, John Murphy, hired you guys to redo his website. You guys did a fantastic job. What an investment that was. Like, you turned his whole website literally upside down and turned it into this like bloody deer, gory website. It was gorgeous. You did a really wonderful job on
e-bike gen. John Murphy, he sold e-bikes.
Yeah, e-bikes for hunters, right? So you guys, yep. You threw some interesting photos on there, but it was like, you guys did an awesome job. Like, what better investment can you make than in yourself? I don't know. That's what I would say. There's just so much you can do to invest in yourself and more importantly, into the best investment vehicle you'll ever have, which is your business.
That one means a lot to me because I needed to be, I think last year I needed to be reminded of that. Like, hey, reinvest in your business. Reinvest in the things that you could control. And so sure enough, I started to do that. And it's been about a year since then. And wow, that really changed things. Suddenly, you know, the business is better. It runs smoother. There's more revenue, more profit. Everything worked better the moment I started putting cash back into it, you know, more than I'd been in the past. And it paid dividends. And so I'm like, wow, you know, how far can you scale that? And where could you go with that? So I like that advice. I think, you know, as entrepreneurs, as, you know, the business gets more successful, that lifestyle creep trap can get anybody. You know, it just depends on the, you just happen to say yes to the wrong thing, man. And that, then it happens. And then from there, it's like, oh, well, you know, now you start, as the owner, you start paying yourself more. Or suddenly there's less going back into the business. And that can be detrimental, but you don't notice it. You don't feel it, right? Because you're buying yourself your toys or whatever. I think that's a mistake that anybody can get into.
I think a lot of e-commerce store owners are just like me. You know, maybe they weren't a forklift driver at Walmart, but they were a nobody in e-commerce, right? They've never done this before. And so I think there's too many of us who just don't know what to do. And we're too scared to go look stupid and ask, right? There's so many experts out there that, you know, for $200 an hour, $500 an hour, $1,000 an hour, you can go pay for their time. And they're going to give you so much in that short period of time that will blow your mind. They're going to tell you exactly what you need to do. And you just need to listen and go apply that. So I think the easiest place to reinvest is just getting advice, or spend it to go be in the rooms. ECF is wonderful. Go put yourself in ECF. If you're doing seven figures, e-commerce fuel, you're going to get a lot of the forums. You're going to get even more if you go to ECF Live. And there are many masterminds that are just like that, or live events that are similar to that, that you can go be around other people who are doing the same thing as you, who are smarter than you, who are 10 steps ahead of you or 10 steps behind. One way or another, you're going to help somebody or you're going to get helped. And I promise you, it'll be an investment that you will not regret making.
Would you ever hire a wealth manager? Would you hire someone to manage your money?
I think I would need to have a lot of money in order to give them a fee to manage my money. But honestly, I don't think it's rocket science, right? If you really want to get simple, just put it in the market, put it in VOO or any of those ETFs that ride the whole market. And at minimum, you're going to ride the money growth. Like, you're going to average about 12% per year. That's about what we print per year of the money supply. And so at least you're keeping up with inflation at that point. If you just let it sit in the bank account, it's like holding a melting ice cube.
Yeah, for sure. I would not hire a money manager. Just the idea of, like, you know, giving someone else access, letting them be in charge of it. It never happening. I like my independence. And that includes not giving up that control to a money manager. Plus, man, any service, any person who wants to take a percent of revenue, I'm like, all right, let's be suspicious of that, because that pays dividends for them, not me.
You might want to put like a buffer between you and the decision anyway, right? If you want to make all the decisions, that's cool. And again, this is not advice. I'm not an expert or a lawyer, any of those things, but you should probably put a buffer in between your really, really like emotional monkey brain and the ability to do something, right? Like, when the market tank, like, you know, use what did he call it? Liberation Day, when we did all the tariffs, right? The market just absolutely tanked. And I know quite a few people who sold and they were like freaking out. And the market's right back to where it was a month later, right?
All they had to do was wait. Heard a lot of stories, heard from friends who've been successful and sold businesses and then are absolutely miserable later. Like, they achieve that independent wealth where they don't have to work, but then they don't know what to do with themselves and they become, you know, quite depressed about it. What do you do? You know, what would you do if you were in that position?
Look, I hope to get to that position. I don't think I'm there. I think I'm in a place where I'm comfortable. And I think there's a movie called The Gambler where the father in Roseanne, if you will, what's his name? John Goodman, where John Goodman says, you know, get to a place of fuck you money, where it's just like, you know, you got just enough to buy a house and put a 26-year roof on it and have some money set aside and live off the dividends. And like, if you want to work, great. If the boss is mean to you, fuck you. If you want to build a business, great. If it's not doing well, you know, you can just tell everyone, you know, F you if you want to. And so I think getting to a place like that is powerful. I'm certainly not to a place where I don't need to work anymore. I would love to get there at some point. But I would say, through working on the mindset stuff and getting to this place, the chip on my shoulder is gone. And what a real advantage a chip on your shoulder is to be somebody who, you know, your family's still doubting you, your friends are still doubting you. People are, you know, tall poppy syndrome, as they call it in Australia, crabs in the pot. People are trying to pull you down. Oh, don't start that thing. Oh, you'll never make that. You should just come back and work. Like, that chip on your shoulder to like prove people wrong, or prove your dad wrong, or prove your mom wrong, or whatever it is for you, whatever that chip is. I would say removing that kind of sucks, because it used to be what drove me. And it took a while for me to shift to like purpose and shift towards really just growth, right? That there is no endpoint. Just every challenge in and of itself is the joy of like getting better every single day. But for a long time, it was just, you know, sorry to swear so much on your show, Kurt, but just like, fuck you. I'm going to show you, like, I'm going to show my teachers. I'm going to show my boss. Like literally when I got fired, their words were, seems like you're having fun doing that cute little internet thing. And they fired me from Walmart. Like that was the end of my employment at any company, right?
Two watchwords you got to watch out for. If someone says uses cute or little, it's like they do not want your success. Yeah.
But you know, losing that chip, it's frustrating for sure. And it took a long time to like realize purpose. And then again, John and I started Dropship Breakthrough. We've helped thousands of people start e-commerce businesses. You've had multiple on this show, which is fucking wild. John Murphy, Jaden coming on the show a couple of weeks ago as well. Another student of ours who had a good exit. We have so many successful students. Some of them have become business partners of ours at this point. And so that's been cool, right? That the shift to helping others rather than helping yourself, was told to me. People told me that's what you should do and that it's going to feel so rewarding. But, you know, for a long time, it doesn't feel like that, right? Because you're just fighting for yourself. And I would tell you that transition is super helpful. And maybe it's not a course for you. Maybe it's some other way that you give back. But giving back is certainly something that I didn't think would be this rewarding. And it definitely is.
I agree with that. You know, from the folks I've talked to, it's like ultimately, you need purpose. You can't just chill forever. Maybe some people can. But I think, you know, the people of entrepreneurial backgrounds don't. And, you know, they have to have that purpose. They're work dogs. They need to be doing the work. But you could get that same satisfaction, you know, out of helping others, out of volunteering, you know, whatever it is. And yeah, it's powerful. This is a great episode. You're so candid. You know, you really shared everything and all it really with the intention of helping others with the same mistake or showing other people, hey, you know, you're not alone in these same things, because everyone has made mistakes with money, everybody. And so it's just refreshing to hear somebody talk about it, because you go online and it's like nothing but Gen Z kids with Lambos. And then, you know, other people complaining that Gen Z kids don't know how to do anything. You're like, okay. Yeah. I don't know what to believe anymore. So with you, it's nice to hear something honest.
I'm just happy to share. I hope somebody, you know, at home can relate to either this version of the story or the last one in 2022. I think that's a different version of my story as well, that hopefully more people can relate to and realize, you know, we're all just doing our best here.
And Ben, where can we learn more about you?
Absolutely. You can find me at dropshipbreakthrough.com or on the Dropship Podcast. And John and I are about to launch a new, more business focused, interesting podcast soon too. So look for that coming soon.
Cool. Very cool. Ben Negendorf, Dropship Breakthrough. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me, buddy.
Crowdfunding campaigns are great. You can add social proof and urgency to your product pre-orders while reducing risk of failure. But with traditional crowdfunding platforms, you're paying high fees and giving away control, all while your campaign is lost in a sea of similar offers. It can be frustrating. That's why we built Crowdfunder, the Shopify app that turns your Shopify product pages into your own independent crowdfunding campaigns. We originally created Crowdfunder for our private clients, and it was so successful, we turned it into an app that anyone can use. Today, merchants using Crowdfunder have raised millions collectively. With Crowdfunder, you'll enjoy real-time tracking, full campaign control, and direct customer engagement. And it's part of the Built for Shopify program, so you know it's easy to use. So say goodbye to high fees and hello to successful store-based crowdfunding. Start your free trial and transform your Shopify store into a pre-order powerhouse today. Search Crowdfunder in the Shopify App Store to get started.